Right, we continue in our studies, The Lies the World Tells, and tonight we're going to consider the great lie of pornography. Now, do you think pornography is a problem in this nation as well as worldwide? It's a $16 billion business. I think their figures suggest it's something that's in demand. You see, the mindset of the world regards pornography as an indicator of real freedom and liberty. That's how they interpret it, that's how they approach it. And that's why they embrace it. They see it as liberty and freedom. I was confronted with this concept or this worldview when I was 14 years old. I was in a government school in Rhodesia, and pornography was illegal to have in the nation, so you could be prosecuted for having it. So it was something that wasn't freely available. And I'm sitting in class, and my school teacher is a male, and he's bemoaning the fact of the oppression of living in this country where adults do not have the privilege and the right to go and watch pornography in their own house. So he's telling this class of 14-year-old boys what an oppressive situation this is, because true liberty and freedom would have the ability to go and do that. When you consider evolution, do you know what the most basic belief of evolution is? It's the idea that regeneration arises from chaos. Life is birthed from chaos. That's what evolution embraces, that's what it proclaims. Revolutions and riots, they flow from this belief. A revolutionary, guys who are involved in rioting, they'll destroy and fling a society into chaos because it's a legitimate path to real life. They believe that by doing this, revolution cleanses. It brings about purity and cleansing. And so they've bought into and imbibed this worldview that regeneration comes out of chaos. Birth and new life comes from chaos. And when they're cleansing a society, everything becomes permissible. If you study the atrocious revolutions like the French Revolution or the Russian Revolution, which, by the way, the French Revolution is celebrated every year as a great, the Bastille Day or whatever it is, it's a great time of remembrance. When those are the high points in our nation, we've got problems. But there are no fixed rules except this one. Christianity is banned. So pornography flows from the same idea of chaos. And it's the fruit of a worldview. Pornography is a worldview. You've got to realize that. And I believe one of the key tools to us fighting against it in our own lives and in our families is to realize that we're dealing here with a worldview. It's coming from a very consistent and definite view of life and reality. And pornography is a revelation of this worldview. It contains a view about life. It contains a view about reality. And it contains a view about regeneration. It's not merely pictures or words on paper or some kind of a screen. That's not what is merely being communicated. These pictures and words are teaching a worldview. They are a worldview. They're proclaiming the source of life. They're proclaiming where we look to in order to attain life and completion. Pornography doesn't lead to the disintegration of a culture. You know, sometimes we think that. We say, wow, you know what led to this demise is pornography. Pornography is a revelation. It's a manifestation of a culture's disintegration. This is what a culture does when it is disintegrating. It embraces this, it promotes it, and it's received by the culture. Together, which comes first, the chicken and the egg? It's that kind of a scenario. It's an integral part of a culture's disintegration. So pornography is a manifestation of a culture's embedded world and life view. It reveals what that culture believes. Culture is the manifestation of what people believe. That's what our culture is. This is American culture. It's merely a manifestation of what we believe. And so when you talk about any nation's culture, they're saying, okay, I can tell you their beliefs by what we see in their culture. The things that they exalt, the things that they hold up to be important and significant, that shows us what they truly believe. So evolution, pornography, and sexual perversion are closely connected because they all champion the idea of regeneration through chaos. That's what they believe. That's what pornography is ultimately teaching. Regeneration through chaos. Destroy and disintegrate things. And from that we get this life and this freedom and liberty. When a people deny the truth that man is made in God's image, and that they see man merely as this product of time and chance, this animalistic creation that comes out of the slime and is who knows where he's going to, when they view man as that, then man is free to do what comes natural. Because what comes natural, they say, is normal. This is how nature created him. This is what he does. That comes natural, do it. So when God is removed from the picture, so too is his law and ethics. And so such people, they claim the ability to practice any kind of sexual expression because to them, the real proof of their liberty and freedom is that. This proves I'm free, I have liberty. And the Western world, to a large degree, would claim that. People would look to those nations where you've got extreme liberal laws in this regard, and I'll say that's true freedom over there. I know Sweden is one of those countries that leads in that, even above the United States, I believe. However, it's not merely a denial of God. It's also a declaration of war against God and His order in society. That's what it actually is. It's declaring war against the order of God. So pornography is at war with the most basic integer or unit in God's kingdom plan. You see, sexuality is fundamental to the outworking of God's dominion mandate. But this is sexuality within the confines of biblical marriage. And what pornography does is take the sacred entity of sex and fling it into the universe where there are no morals. A universe imagined in the minds of rebellious sinners. This is what the universe should be like, and so we're going to express ourselves in this way. This is the goals we should attain. This is how it should look. And so we take that sacred thing and we fling it without any bounds and controls. The mindset presents a different reality. This mindset that's created in the sinner's mind. He wants us to believe in a different reality. And pornography is presenting a different reality. Something that is in complete contradiction to what God has set up and how the world truly functions. The sinner's mind wants us to embrace that. According to God's worldview, He protects what is precious and critical to His kingdom with laws that define, that regulate, and thus preserve. That which is precious and significant and central to God's kingdom, He protects it with His law and explains what it is. So as we remember that sex was created by God and given a very central and critical role in God's kingdom, the scriptures exhort us to celebrate this gift in marriage. It's a wonderful thing, but it must stay within the boundaries God has revealed for it. Pornography and thus sexual perversion zeroes in on this critical component and declares war upon it in attempt to destroy civilization. That's what its goal is. Pornography has one goal, and that is complete destruction, chaos. And it's going to destroy that, bring down any civilization that embraces it. You must not underestimate what is the real goal of pornography. It's the utter obliteration of God and the Christian civilization. That's its goal. That's its objective, and that's where it is aiming. And it's step by step, that's what it is working to undermine and destroy. And we must not be unmindful of that. It's not an exaggeration to say that that's its objective. Because with something so central to the working of God's kingdom, as sexuality, is turned into a chaotic mess, the result is only going to be the destruction of Christian civilization. This battle, where so much is at stake, revolves around two simple though opposite propositions. That's all it revolves around. People either believe Proposition 1 or they believe Proposition 2. And Proposition 1 is, God's law word alone can preserve sexuality and thus preserve civilization and true liberty. God's word alone can do that. It can preserve sexuality and preserve civilization and liberty. The second proposition is, God's restrictions upon man's sexual expression oppresses true liberty. So those are the two worldviews that you're going to approach when you're dealing with a subject. Those are the two positions people will adopt. Now, if nature, not God, are ultimate, then what is right. Because nature has created it. This is what has come forth. How can you deny the legitimacy of what nature has brought forth? Everything is the product of nature, and nature has no definite morals. Thus, no matter what desires exist in man, we have no authority to deny him fulfilling those desires. On what basis do we tell this person he cannot fulfill his desires? According to this worldview, then, the real criminal is the one who tries to prevent people from fulfilling their every desire. You're trying to control me? You're trying to restrict me from fulfilling what I want to do? You're the criminal here. So who's the worst criminal? The self-conscious Christian who wants to apply God's word to all of life. He's the greater criminal. You see, pornography is sexual fantasy. And sexual fantasy assaults reality by either distracting people from living in terms of reality or making them dissatisfied with reality as God has made it. But to live in this realm of sexual fantasy is to self-destruct. It's not a neutral thing to fill one's mind with sexual images because sexuality is so central to our being and existence. When people embrace sexual fantasy, they are at the same time embracing the legitimacy of a reality that is not from God. They're wanting to separate themselves from the real word and live in this realm up here that they create in their minds, whatever kind of realm it is, and that's where they transpose their reality to. That's the new reality that I want to live in. I want to exist according to those things. Sinful man in vain tries to establish his own reality by denying God's reality. However, this is a fruitless and impossible task and ends in the destruction of the rebel. That's basically the core problem with pornography. I know there's many other consequences that flow from it, but it's that embracing a fantasy existence where somebody projects into the images he's looking at. Now, on a side, women do not pursue pornography, the same kind of pornography that men do. However, they do have a pornography. Do you know what it is? Romance novels is the same thing. What a guy gets when he looks at pornography, that's what a woman receives when she reads a romance novel. Because what she's doing is transposing her life into this realm of fictional romance, which is divorced and separate from the reality where she finds herself. And so she's escaping from the reality. She doesn't want to live in this reality, and so she jumps up into this realm and she's living in that realm. And therefore she compares her life to what she's reading in these romance novels, and she finds reality a bore, and her joy is found in this fantasy and romance. And so when you've got a husband looking at pornography and you've got a wife reading romance novels, they are both doing the same thing. And they are both escaping from reality and creating a world where they're going to function in this ideal realm where they have in their minds. A vital tool we need in order to reject the pornographic worldview is to recognize it as an extremely aggressive assault against the very core of God's kingdom. We've got to see that. This is a worldview. This is a clear, definitive attack against the kingdom of God. And when we see that, then we suddenly recognize, whoa, we've got a problem here. This is something that is serious. Pornography proclaims another worldview, which means it pursues a whole different existence to what God has told us about. And I assure you that it's a lie that leads fools to their destruction. So it's giving us another realm, another reality, and saying this is a possible existence. You can fantasize about it, you can hope for it, you can live your terms in trying to achieve it, but it's presenting another reality. The way we are to resist pornography nowadays is to understand that its manifestation is evidence of a whole way of life that is at war with God. When we understand this, then we'll be able to stand in a culture that is extremely pornographic. And we are. We're assaulted it from many different aspects. But we need to realize what is assaulting us. What is coming forth? This is no different than some radical religious zealot coming up to you and saying, hey, I'm out to destroy Christianity. That's what is happening. You say, oh, that sounds nice. Should we have some coffee? We need to identify it as that. We need to see it as that. And so when it presents itself to us, we can immediately respond in that way. I know what this is. I identify it. I recognize it. And therefore, my response then follows from that. So when we understand this, then we'll be able to stand. We'll not be fleeing as well. We'll not be fleeing like a hound of prey, not knowing where to look and where to go, dreading that it might pounce upon us from any angle. We stay clear of the obvious in the same way we stay clear of being seduced by the more subtle. And that is by seeing every manifestation of the pornographic worldview as just that, a worldview that is completely at war with God. Okay, there's the blatant and explicit books and movies and stuff that reveal this other worldview, and we should not even spend time with those at all. But there are also the subtle manifestations. That's probably the area that we also need to be aware of. And these subtle manifestations bombard us from every side, from advertisements, when we're walking in the street. How someone dresses reveals their worldview. It reveals what they believe. It shows the core of what's inside their heart. But what happens when you find yourself in a context where there's a very skimpily and seductively clad lady? Very real dynamic. Firstly, we must not act like a pursued and doomed prey. I'm done for. This is it. It's over. Can't resist this. I'm a male. How can I? That's not how we must respond, first of all. We're not victims in such a situation. We must not act like victims. I do not want to communicate a message that somehow implies that because I saw this lady with an incredibly low top on, that somehow now I have no resistance to that. Okay, we do not want to communicate that message. We're shortchanging our sons and ourselves if we think, well, that, what can I do? The way we are to deal with such situations is on the worldview level. We can immediately recognize the worldview of death. I recognize this. I know what's going on here. This is clear. This is proclaiming to me something that is a worldview of death. And we must recognize it as that. We must recognize it as some zealous Muslim who's declared jihad against all non-believers from his perspective. That's what it is. And it's death and destruction is coming towards you. We can immediately recognize that. We can recognize the death and the chaos and see that it's that worldview that is directing that person to some degree. This should immediately bring to mind our own worldview. Okay, it's a worldview clash. What we've seen here is a worldview clash. So as this worldview presents itself, our worldview rises to it. It says, okay, I recognize this, and now my worldview supplies and says, how do I respond in this situation? Because our worldview is the only truth there is. And so I respond to that situation in accordance with God's truth. I can't think of a particular illustration, but let's imagine you're in this situation where you can't just walk away from this immodestly dressed lady. You can't just walk away. Okay, I don't know what that situation is, but let's just, for the argument's sake, present it. I can't just walk away. You shouldn't be reduced at that stage to a bumbling, stuttering idiot who's incapable of putting two sentences together. Look her in the eye and communicate with her. I'm not talking about being alone with this person somewhere. That's the situation sort of you get him out, as Joseph did, you know. I'm talking about some other scenario, which I can't think of that particular scenario, but I'm just trying to use it as an illustration. So how do you respond? Worldview. She hasn't said anything to me, but she has said a lot. Her worldview is clear, it's presented, it's laid forth before me, and now I must respond with my worldview. And these worldviews are at war. And the worldview that she's portraying is out to utterly destroy God's kingdom. It's nothing less than that. That's what it's about. This is destruction, this is war. And so we rise to that occasion with our worldview that is also at war. So we're not a victim. We know the truth. The only truth on this matter of sexuality, we know what that is. We know what God has said. We know what the boundaries are. We know what God has portrayed. What you've been confronted with is a worldview that's presenting a lie. In this case, it's a lie about sexuality. It's telling us it might be an enticing thing, but it's presenting a lie about what true sexuality is. So my worldview rises to that with the response of God's truth. Because God's worldview that we should imbibe through the scriptures, it defines holy sex, which is within the boundaries that God's law word has set up. That is marriage. He has defined it, He has laid it out, and we embrace that. And so we confront that worldview with what is holy. This is unholy. This is something that is destructive. This is out for not only my soul, it's out for the complete destruction of my family. It's out for the complete destruction of Christian civilization. And realize that. See, it's a war unto death. What we are constantly bombarded with in the world is death. And that takes on different disguises. Do you know that? Every time we're confronted with a wrong worldview, we are confronted with a form of death, but it's putting on a different disguise. And so it's changing shape and face. But we must not be deceived by that. It's not really hard to identify a worldview of death. If there's anything that differs from God's truth, that's why we need to know the word. We need to have a complete worldview of God's truth so that we can understand and identify that which is not from God. So when you're confronted with another worldview, what should flash into your mind is that death and destruction lie at the end of those ideas. This person's life, whatever the idea is or whatever the manifestation is, they've embraced certain ideas and the end of those ideas are death. We know what true sexuality looks like because God has described it for us. And thus anything that contradicts God's explanation is death. So now, anyway, picture a human and then you get this flashing image where it turns into this kind of skeleton death image and flashes back, you know, to show you that this is what the person's really like. So that's the image we need to have in our minds when we're confronted with a false worldview. We must realize, as we're looking at that person, what needs to flash into our minds is the end of that path, which is death. Their ideas and the thing that's being presented, that's death. And so that's the image that should come to mind. And then we respond, we realize, okay, this is how we respond. I'm called out now, I'm warned. That's the warning flag. And then I respond according to God's truth. That's how we deal with temptation. But it also enables us then to relate to that person as an eternal soul in need of Christ's redemption. And we relate to them on that side. They need the truth. I don't know what the scenario is, but you're not walking away, but you're sharing the truth with this person. And some people are placed and found themselves in such situations. So we need to have confidence about God's truth and by His grace conform our thinking to that truth and not be thrown into a situation where we're so uncomfortable in that context that we're incapable of relating and communicating. But we're dealing still with the worldview. Think about Christ. Can you remember when that prostitute came in? He was at a Pharisee's house. This man had invited him. So a top religious leader invited him to his house. And there's lots of people around and Christ is lying at the table as they would lie. His feet would be back like that. The table would be here and he'd be lying up and they'd be eating together. And this lady comes in and she starts weeping on his feet and wiping his feet with her hair. And this Pharisee is so incredibly embarrassed for the sake of Jesus. He just can't imagine how this man could allow such a woman to even touch him and come close to him. We read in Luke chapter 7. Verses 38 and 39. So this lady came in and stood at his feet behind him, weeping. And she began to wash his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head. And she kissed his feet and anointed them with the fragrant oil. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he spoke to himself saying, "This man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what manner of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner." How could you let somebody like that touch you? I believe Christ dealt with that situation with a worldview. I believe his worldview, he understood the boundaries, he understood the truth, he understood the position he was in, and he would respond to that situation according to worldview. That was the reality for him. I know what reality is. Whatever subject we're going to talk about, I know what reality is. Anything else that is presented to me is fantasy, it's destruction, it's chaos. And so we respond in that way because we know what the reality is. We are to deal with pornography and sexual temptation in the way we deal with any other seductive philosophy. We are to immediately identify it as a rogue worldview. It's coming out with one objective, and that is to destroy. And we respond in that way, as we identify it as being a rogue, and it is at war with the kingdom of heaven. Every rogue worldview is out to destroy, utterly destroy, individuals and families and nations. If we read Proverbs chapters 5 through 7, which you can do at some stage, you see the warnings there that God gives. And it's really a whole lot of stories of a father speaking to his son and warning about the seductive sexual nature of life. My son, hear my words. Listen to me. We see how much warning God gives with respect to sexual purity at the beginning of the Book of Wisdom. We must understand in order to fight against the great pornography assault. It's a worldview war, and this battle is unto death. We also need tools when we're going to help our children, and for fathers to help their sons pursue sexual purity. And a key to that is openness. A vital key to that enabling and assisting is openness. And this subject must be delivered from the hidden closet it is often buried in. Because too many times our own background, our own upbringing or lack thereof has produced in our own families a kind of closet mentality to the subject. And it's kind of something that exists, everybody knows it's there, but it's kind of hidden and it's buried in the closet. We've got to break that down and be able to deal with the subject. Why do we need to deal with it? On a matter of urgency. Why? Let me try and explain with a story. Have you ever been down to the Field Museum and seen the lions of Savu? There's two African lions there that many years ago, it's a brilliant story. If you want to read that story, it's gripping. Where they were building this railway line, and these two lions were very abnormal in their habits and their practices. By the way, what doesn't come out in the movie, there's a movie of that as well called Ghosts in the Darkness, which is not exactly accurate of the books. It's a fairly good representation, a little bit scary. The books are even more exciting than the movie, by the way. They should have just followed the book. But what doesn't come out in the book, I don't believe it's in the book, it's not in the film anyway, is the fact that the reason these lions got the taste of human flesh was practices of chucking your elderly out, euthanasia. So anyway, so these lions now had becoming just abnormal, and they would attack these workers who were working on this railway, building this railway, and grab these people and just pull them away. I mean, they were so big, these lions, they would just drag this adult into the bush, and it was terrifying. So they'd killed many people and eaten them, and so this the man who was kind of running the whole operation, he had to go and hunt these lions and shoot them. It was a pretty touch-and-go situation between who was going to be the victor, between the lions or this man. And we know he was the victor because the two lions are now, they're the actual lion skins in the Field Museum. So it's really worth seeing them if you haven't seen them. And then they've got the little book in the museum there that you could buy and read the story. It's excellent. But now imagine, Dad, that you're an experienced lion hunter and you've battled it, you've fought many lions. And our sons, you know very little about lion hunting. But you find yourselves, I'm speaking to the sons, you find yourselves in a situation where you're confronted or you're faced with these two lions of Savu, similar situation like that, where you have to go up against these lions and bring them down. And they kill a lion. From a father's perspective, this is a life and death challenge between my son and these lions. As a father, how forthcoming are we going to be with our advice and experience, laying it out and saying, you know, let me give you some tips here. Let me explain the dangers. Let me just try and give you some of the experience and the battles that I've been through with lions that will assist you as you now go and fight these lions yourself. And sons, how much advice are you going to want to receive and say, hey, you know, I'd really like to get some advice on this battle that I'm now facing. On the other hand, at that point, the fathers and sons could both pretend that the lions were a minimal problem. They really weren't a major threat. In the same way, the path to sexual purity is perilous and should be one of the primary battles where fathers stand with their sons. We're talking about sons, but stand with their family. Side by side, as they show, as they explain, as they communicate and deal with this serious situation. The tremendous embarrassment that surrounds this topic in Christian homes is not from the scriptures. It really isn't. It's a worldview that comes from another place. And we need to realize that. We need to identify it and have our minds renewed. This will not be easy for first generation to do who've had no background. It's kind of, this is my upbringing. This is what I learned, or this is what I didn't learn. And so it's very difficult. And many fathers will come to this task from a background where there was nothing of this ever mentioned and talked about in their own home. And thus they have no experience about how to communicate with their sons. However, a dad's silence on this subject trivializes the danger that a child faces. It trivializes it. It's not a big issue. It's not really dangerous when we refuse to communicate it. And it also marginalizes the centrality and the importance of sexuality in God's kingdom. That's what we're doing. We're kind of marginalizing the importance of it because it's not a subject. We'll talk about many things. We'll communicate openly about so many things that are important and significant, and yet this subject is marginalized. We're teaching in that. We're communicating. Yes, the world abuses the sacred gift, but we are mistaken when, in order to protect our children and keep them pure, the discussion of sexuality is, in all its many different facets, is hidden from them. We do not hide this from them in order to protect them. We must be communicating its beauty in marriage as well as the dangers of its perversion. We need to be warning and develop a comfort of communication on this subject, that we can stand with them in their battles. This is not to be a silent, lonely nightmare that each young man has to blindly find his way through. What do I do? How does this work? It should not be like that. While everyone hopes and pretends that, well, I'm sure it'll work out. I turned out all right. Yeah, right. Also, sexuality in marriage is a wonderful thing, but it requires an ability to communicate about the subject. It really is important to be able to communicate openly with it, and the place that that starts is in the home, where we equip our children toward being able to freely and unashamedly communicate on the subject in marriage. For them to be able to do that, we need to begin now, so that there's a freeness and an ability to communicate openly, so that when they come to their marriage, they're able themselves to communicate and talk about subjects that are otherwise incredibly difficult. And there is another aspect that what I'm focusing on today is the protection and standing with our sons and daughters as they walk this path of sexual purity, though because of the audience I'm focusing upon the sons, and that's my illustration. To gain the victory, our sons need to become comfortable with the subject and comfortable with their own bodies and changes in their bodies and things like that. It is the truth that sets us free. Safety is in the truth. And contrasting the truth with the lie, That's where safety is. This is the truth, and that's the lie. And we put them both together, and we look at both at the same time. We do not protect and preserve and remain safe by hiding from the lie, by just pulling them back from the lie, and then also at the same time, hiding them from the truth. We expose what is wrong by clearly showing what is right. We are calling our children to be mature in their thinking and behaving, because maturity is a wonderful thing. We want them to be mature. We're encouraging them to be mature. And thus we must rejoice when maturity is attained, not only in behavior, but even as they become men. That is a glorious thing. It is a wonderful thing. It is God's ordering and goal. And so physical maturity is one of the pronounced indicators of when a boy develops into a man. That's one of the pronounced things. He's becoming a man. This is something to rejoice about with our children, because it brings to the fore their purpose. It brings to the fore their responsibility and the ongoing work of God's expanding kingdom. How significant it is. How important it is. How central it is to the kingdom. And where we're going to end up. And why we're going to end up there. And what it's going to entail. And how we're going to arrive at that goal. So these are the things that need to be communicated. And the encouragement and the rejoicing in this fact. This is a wonderful thing. Maturity is a wonderful thing. Growing up, and part of development is that young men now get seed in order to produce future generations. And that is a glorious thing. And it's something to be rejoiced in and to be celebrated. And I believe it should be celebrated together, not wrapped up in silence and shame and embarrassment. In Proverbs 5, a father talking to his son about the dangers of sexual temptation. That's what he's explaining there. But then he unashamedly turns to the positive and likens holy sex to drinking from refreshing cisterns of water, and tells his son to drink from his own cistern. You'll have your own system, you drink from that one, no other system, and keep himself for the wife of his youth. He then uses very vivid imagery in that song, in that proverb, to describe his son's seed in Proverbs 5, verses 16 through 18. And he says to his son, should your fountains, he's talking about his son's seed here. He says, should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of waters in the streets? Let them be only your own, and not that of strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth. So he's talking about, this is a glorious thing. There's the negative. Don't do that. This is what it is. These fountains are for a purpose and a goal and an objective, and this is how they should be used. And this is what it looks like. A man's fountain is not a shameful thing, but a wonderful gift from God. And it is the truth about its purpose and use that is our best protection against its misuse. When we understand the truth and we embrace it, and it's something that we are comfortable with, I believe that is a fundamental protection against its misuse. We are not protecting by denying or ignoring it. When a son has his own fountain, this is a basis for a father and a son to celebrate. This is a wonderful thing. And we thank the Lord. We thank the Lord for the manhood that you've given to my son. I thank you for what this means. And it helps the father focus more and say, hey, I've got a man on my hands and I've got to raise him as a man to accomplish these goals for the kingdom and purposes. It's good to celebrate our sexuality. The way we fight pornography is by worldview. Recognizing a worldview of death and choosing life instead. And when this comes to protecting the next generation, we need to all unashamedly communicate on the subject, exposing the dangers in the light of godly sexuality. We must celebrate sexuality in the home and equip the next generation to be pure and also prepare them so that they will have a wonderful and deep sexual relationship when they get married. A relationship without all the baggage of ignorance and shame and apprehension and indifference and confusion that comes so often into Christian families, not only into the worldly families, because there's this closed subject that there's never developed comfortableness with communicating it and being able to express it and describe it and talk about it and talk through issues. So fathers and sons, I challenge you to begin talking about the subject. There's nothing in God's eyes to be embarrassed about. Even if it's a hard thing in the beginning, the more you talk about it, the more natural it will become. The goal must be unashamed openness and transparency. It's an important tool for overcoming the deceptive worldview that manifests itself as pornography. I believe it's a key to that whole battle. And so those are the two keys that I think we need. That is the understanding and recognizing it as a worldview that's at war with God. And then when applying that to our families and raising our sons, in developing a real openness and comfortableness with these very real aspects of reality and life, and helping them understand and standing with them as they fight the battles that we know lay ahead for them, and as we stand with them, encourage them. Are there any questions?